previously on Unsolved. Gwen Rupert, the lead detective on the case today, tells me Jackson is no longer a suspect in Father Kuntz's death. One reason was that new DNA sample the detectives found a couple of years ago. Detective Rupert thinks it most likely came from the killer, and it doesn't match Brian Jackson.
So does that definitively rule him out, or is that what moved him from suspect to person of interest?
He's not even a person of interest for us anymore.
From the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, this is Unsolved, Season 3, The Devil You Know. I'm Gina Barton. It took more than 10 years for the police to take Brian Jackson off the list of suspects in the murder of Father Alfred Kuntz. I really wanted to talk with Brian Jackson about how this case affected his life. But as you'll recall from our previous episode, he didn't respond to my letters or my phone calls. And when I knocked on his door, he was never home. There's only one other reporter I would trust to try to get Brian Jackson to talk. That's our crime reporter here, Ashley Luthern. Lucky for me, she went to a conference last summer near the town where he lives. So I asked her to knock on his door for me. The first time she tried, no one was home. The second time, Brian Jackson was pulling into his driveway.
Excuse me, sir. Hi. I'm sorry to bother you. Are you Mr. Jackson?
Yes.
Hi, Mr. Jackson. I'm Ashley. I'm a reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Brian told Ashley he couldn't do an interview until Father Kuntz's murder has been solved. But he did chat with her for a few minutes.
You know what I mean?
I
just can't.
Until it's officially closed?
Yeah. Everything. Hopefully someday they will, God.
That's why we're focusing on the story, honestly.
Good. I wish they'd stop barking up this tree, because that's what I think waylaid them.
That's the thing. I can't imagine how this has affected you, obviously, personally, but also being under this
years
cloud
ago,
of
really
su-
did
suspicion,
for a long time.
You know?
Because all I was trying to do was help, and then I finally was wised up, because I almost, you know.
Ashley tried one more thing to try to convince Brian to reach out to me. She told him Father Kuntz's murder would be featured on Season 3 of this show, not just in the newspaper.
She has a podcast. It's amazing. So.
Oh, she does? What's her podcast?
It's called Unsolved.
Oh, I'll have to listen
to
those. I listen to like Sword and Scale and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah?
As soon as I heard that tape, I added Sword and Scale to my feed. And I really hope Brian Jackson has added Unsolved to his. Brian, if by some chance you're listening, please get in touch. I still really want to talk to you. Some of the investigators who worked the case in the late 1990s and early 2000s were convinced of Brian Jackson's innocence even back then. One of them was Wayne Honer, who had questioned Jackson early on. Honer had also spoken several times with Maura Smith, the waitress and friend of Father Kuntz who had served in the Marines. At the time of the murder, Maura had recently gotten divorced and moved home to Wisconsin. She was raising two young boys on her own.
I was able to establish a rapport with Maura because I had a military background and she also had a military background, the same branch, both Marine Corps. And so we had a little something in common. And during the course of the several interviews with her, there was an awful lot of information that just come flooding out of Maura Smith.
During one of those interviews, Wayne says it was maybe the third or fourth one, Maura Smith told him about an ex-lover of hers. His name was Len Snowden, and he was a tattoo artist. They met at the restaurant where she worked, and Maura told Len she had always wanted a tattoo of a particular floral design on her back, but she couldn't afford it.
And he apparently got into conversations with her, made a deal with her that he would be willing to give her a tattoo, which was going to take several sessions to do because it's quite large, and she wouldn't have to pay him anything, but the deal was that they apparently have tattoo showings in different towns and cities, and you actually go and be a model for the tattoo that you have. And after lots of conversation with him, he pretty much made a play for her to take this from just a tattoo session into a sexual session, which they did.
Afterward, Morris Smith started feeling guilty, so she talked with Father Kuntz about the encounter.
She went to her confessor, and that would have been Father Kuntz, and explained to him that she had had sexual contact with this tattoo artist, and she felt horrible about it. She was pretty much, in her ways, making a confession that wasn't in the confessional setting, and she wanted some guidance from Father Kuntz. Father Kuntz apparently knew this individual, knew what this individual was capable of, and he was angered that this individual would take advantage of Maura.
Maura told me the same thing, that Father Kuntz told her to steer clear of Len Snowden.
But then when I found out from Father Kuntz that he had a criminal past, that he actually did jail, Father Kuntz warned me about him. He says, I went and talked to him. I told him he needed to stay away from you. And then Len told me, he says, I don't care. He says, I really like you.
According to Detective Honer, Snowden would not take no for an answer.
The individual that she had sexual contact with asked Maura to leave the country with him, to travel with him. Go across the country, they'd start fresh, him and her together, their kids along, and they would travel the countryside making money. He would do tattoo jobs, make enough money to keep going that way, but he wanted her to leave with him. And she refused to leave, saying that there were three things that would keep her here in Wisconsin and not allow her to travel, and that was her kids, her church, and her priest.
Detective Honer says after Father Kuntz was murdered, Snowden spoke with Maura Smith again.
At some point, and it would have been right after the homicide, this individual did approach her again and again asked her to leave, but making some statement that, and I don't know how the statement actually came out, but it was something to the effect of, now will you leave with me?
Len Snowden still lives in Wisconsin, way out in the country. Photographer Mark Hoffman and I drove out to the address, but when we got there, we couldn't even see a house because there were too many trees. All we saw was a long driveway that headed into the woods. A sign was tacked to one of the trees. No trespassing.
Do we trespass or it's posted?
Well, what does that mean?
It means,
should we walk?
It means we're not allowed on his land. Like, if I run into this at work,
yeah,
I don't go on it. That's the, I mean, it's clearly marked.
Well, how do we talk to him then?
I'm just saying, it's posted.
We decided to err on the side of caution and not ignore the sign. Mark felt pretty strongly about that. I was less concerned about trespassing, but the property was so secluded and so remote, it made me a little uneasy. I called instead from the car. Len Snowden picked up right away. He told me he had nothing to do with Father Kuntz's murder, and he was not happy the police had treated him as a suspect.
Well, I met the man, I think, once. No, I'll take that back. It might have been twice I met him, and it was at the restaurant. They asked me if I'd ever been over to the church. See, I assumed the man lived in a house somewhere over there, but later on, we were told that he lived in the school or the church or something. I didn't know that much about him, to be honest with you. But these guys kept piling one thing on top of the other, making assumptions. And when I finally got disgusted with him, I said, unless you pull a Mark Furman on me, which means adding, you know, putting evidence out there that, you know, you're not going to have to find a thing. You're not going to find a hair from my body or anywhere near that place. You won't find any evidence whatsoever.
At the end of the conversation, I thanked Len for talking to me. I told him we would have knocked on his door, but we wanted to respect his no trespassing sign. Here's what he said about that.
the no trespassing sign, by the way, is not to keep people like you from coming back here. It's mainly to keep deer hunters from coming up here poaching deer off our land. We own 43 acres of this woods. That's what that no trespassing sign is for. So don't take it personal.
I considered that an invitation to come back another time and knock on the door. I'll tell you what happened when I did after a break.
Hi, I'm Adam, and I work with Gina and the Unsolved crew here at the Journal Sentinel. Support for this episode comes from HelloFresh. HelloFresh will help you conquer the kitchen with delicious recipes that are easy to make. Every week, they deliver an insulated box full of fresh, pre-measured ingredients right to your door, along with easy-to-follow recipe cards. They do all of the planning, shopping, and prepping, so you can focus on a healthier you and a happier family. Each recipe takes a maximum of 30 minutes and less than 2 pots and pans, which makes the cleanup as easy as the cooking. HelloFresh can help you avoid 2 of my most common dinner pitfalls. Fairly often I come home from work and I'm tired and hungry and just have no idea what to make for dinner. Sometimes when I do decide to cook, I get started on a recipe and then realize halfway through I'm missing one of the ingredients. Neither of these things happened when we tried HelloFresh. All of the ingredients for pineapple poblano beef tacos were right there waiting when I got home from work, including fresh limes and peppers and cilantro. There are 3 plans to choose from: classic, veggie, and family, with the option to change plans when your tastes change. Right now, HelloFresh has a special offer for Unsolved listeners. For $80 off your first month of HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/UN80 and enter promo code UN80. That's HelloFresh.com/UN80, promo code UN80.
The fact that Len Snowden was so chatty on the phone and that he specifically said we shouldn't worry about the no trespassing sign gave me the courage to knock on his door a few weeks later. This time, Bill Schultz, our audio engineer, joined me. We drove up the long driveway and through the woods to the house. Len Snowden came right to the door. He talked to us on the porch for a bit, and then he invited us in. I heard voices inside, and I thought maybe he was babysitting his grandchildren or something. Then he introduced us to his dog, which whined a lot more than my kids had when they were toddlers. And the voices I heard? Those turned out to be his birds, Peaches and Mr. Giggles.
Hey, you want to show him your trick? Come here. Get up here. Come here.
What did she say?
She said, hi, Peaches.
Oh, hi, Peaches.
Do you want to show him your trick? Come here. Get up on the shoulder. Come on. No. No, not my...
After a bit more convincing, Peaches perched on Len's arm and did a somersault, where she turned totally upside down without her feet leaving his arm.
And whee!
Whoa! All right. Good trick, nice. Peaches.
She's a sweetheart.
After Peaches finished her trick, the rest of us sat down in the living room. One of the first things I asked Len Snowden about was his relationship with Maura Smith. He said the cops had asked him about that as well.
No, to be honest with you, and, you know, I'm not ashamed of it. Her and I had a physical relationship, but it was like a one-night stand. But they understood, and I said, but you know, these cops, that was the premise that they used to come after me. They figured that Maura and I were having a relationship, and Father Kuntz found out about it, and I said, well, wait a minute, I'm not an idiot. Priests do not divulge what they hear in a confession. That's against every canon law in the world. They don't do that.
How'd you know that? Are you Catholic?
No, I was in a foster home as a kid, and I had to go to Catholic church.
Okay.
Didn't like that either. I drank the holy water one day. I've been good ever since.
Oh, man.
And the woman who was taking care of me at the time, she popped me upside the head. She said, that's holy water. I said, thank you, God. That was the beginning of my smart-ass days, you know.
Len Snowden says Father Kuntz never said anything to him about Maura Smith. He says he didn't want to run away with her. And in fact, he broke up with her rather than the other way around.
Like I said, it didn't last long because I just felt uncomfortable with her for some reason. And I didn't dislike her. It's just that I didn't know her, and I wasn't, for whatever reason, I wasn't trying to get to know her.
Len Snowden admitted he had spent some time in jail as a younger man on minor offenses.
Yeah, I have a record from way back, and they were misdemeanor charges, by the way, to the best of my memory.
I checked his record, and he was telling the truth. There were only misdemeanors, larceny, breaking and entering. There was also a conviction for having sexual contact with a minor over age 16, but that was a misdemeanor too, because of her age. Len Snowden says he had an alibi for the night of Father Kuntz's murder. At the time, he was renting the lower level of a house from a friend of his, a woman named Donna O'Malley. He also used that space as a tattoo shop.
She got madder than hell over this whole thing. She tried to tell the cops that I was there, and I was. I was working on about five people the night that this supposedly happened. And she was upstairs and I was downstairs, and she knew where I was at. I had a lot of customers that came in that shop. And I wish I could have remembered who the five... I know I had five people in there, because that was the night that Peaches pulled a good one. That's Mr. Giggles, the African Grey.
Okay.
I had them both in the shop, and I had a blue and gold macaw at the time, too, in a cage. And everybody loved those birds. They'd play with them, talk to them. But Peaches started screaming one day, and it was close to the evening, which Moluccan cockatoos do this. And the theory is they're calling the flock when they do it. They're calling all the other birds together. So you don't want to be around when they're doing that. But at any rate, in the shop, I'm in there working on, I think it was another lady, and Peaches started screaming. And all at once I heard Mr. Giggles hollering, "Knock it off." Five times he said, "Knock it off," and she would not stop. The sixth time, and this is, so help me God, the sixth time she hollered, he said, "Shut the f*** up." You know she did?
She shut up.
She shut up and never heard another peep out of her all night. And it happened because I had five other people right there to hear it.
I asked Wayne Honer, the retired detective, if he remembered hearing that story from Len Snowden.
When you're talking about this, it almost sounds familiar, like maybe there was a bird there. I don't remember, I guess, carrying on a conversation with it, but that's pretty wild. I mean, but he didn't give us any, at that time, he didn't give us that there was any clients in the thing there. It was like, it was just like another day. He's in the house with Donna. No way to verify anything. We had nothing with him at that point.
Wayne told me he did remember something else about his visit to Len's tattoo shop.
He was a very, enthusiastic knife collector. And we know the homicide was committed with a knife. And this guy had a large collection of knives when I talked to him. Looking around the room, there was displays of knives and swords, and very proud of the knives.
Honer says Snowden dressed like a biker back then. You know, sleeveless leather vest, studded boots, all that.
During the course of the final part of the interview, I noticed that he was wearing a knife sheath on his belt. And with the biker look and the biker type dress that he seemed to be trying to imitate, the leather sheath looked appropriate. A lot of bikers carry buck knives, the folding knife on their belt, and it's usually encased in a sheath like that. I asked to see it, and he said, "Yes, you can." And at that time, he produced a knife that was in that brown leather pouch that did not fit the pouch. It was a red Swiss Army knife. And I said, "This is the knife that you always carry with you?" And he says, "Oh, yes, I carry this all the time. I've carried it for years." I have never seen anybody carry a Swiss Army knife in a leather fold-over snap pouch like this one. It did not fit the pouch. And I was struck by this. I thought, this is not right. This guy is trying to look like a biker. Bikers don't carry Swiss Army knives.
As it turns out, Len Snowden had been expecting the cops to show up at the tattoo parlor. That's because Maura Smith had told Len she gave the police his name. Honer says That would have given Len Snowden time to swap out his usual knife for the Swiss Army knife, which would have been less suspicious. Remember, Father Kuntz was nearly decapitated. It would be virtually impossible to make such a deep cut with the blade on a little Swiss Army knife. Honer also told me he regretted something about that interview with Snowden.
I made a mistake when I left that parlor because I did not ask for the sheath. I took the knife. And I asked if I could retain the knife, and he willingly gave me the knife, and we walked out the door with it, but I did not take the sheath, and that was probably cardinal rule evidence 101, and I screwed it up.
That was such a huge mistake, because if the knife that was used in the murder had been inside that sheath at any point, some evidence, such as blood or DNA, could have been left behind. In any case, Honer thought Len Snowden's friend and landlord, Donna O'Malley, could help the police get to the bottom of things. So they brought her in for questioning.
And at the end of the entire interview, I had to ask Donna to identify what kind of a knife Lenny carries. And she began to explain to me that Lenny always carries a knife in a pouch on the side of his belt. And that knife is a buck knife. It's a folding knife. It's about 3 or 4 inches long when it's folded, but it's about 7 inches long when it's opened up. She gestured. It opens, it closes, it folds. It's brown. It's got brass on the bolsters. It's a knife. It's a buck knife. And this question was posed to her a half dozen times. I had her to the point of yelling at me across the desk, "Don't you effing know what a buck knife is?" I figured that she's confirmed this about 10 times now, that it has no resemblance to a Swiss Army knife. And at that time, I pulled out the evidence bag that was a see-through bag that had the red Swiss Army knife in it. And I said, "I'm going to show you the knife that I took off of your tenant." At that point, I laid the knife down on the desk. She sat there with her mouth hanging open for a few seconds. And she said, "No, that is not the knife you took off of him."
The interview ended not long after that, and Donna left. Detective Honer says he and his partner were still in the squad room talking about what she had said when the phone rang. His partner took the call, then came back and told Honer about it.
And he said, "That was Donna O'Malley." I said, "What is she saying?" And she said, "She just got to thinking about it now, and that red Swiss Army knife is the knife that Lenny always carries." Total 180-degree turn, and then we realized that Lenny Snowden was in the parking lot and had given her the ride home after the interview.
Len says he didn't influence what Donna said in any way. He says she didn't tell the police anything incriminating because there was nothing to tell.
It was a disappointment to them, I guess, because they didn't get a damn thing out of her. But they gave her a hard time then.
Donna O'Malley refused to talk to the police again. She died in 2009. Len Snowden told me the police confiscated 3 knives from him during their investigation into Father Kuntz's murder.
I had an old Swiss Army knife that I spent $85 for. They got that. And I asked them about getting it back at one time. And they said, "Oh, well, we're going to keep this for evidence."
The second was an old blade he used for digging in the ground when he went looking for treasure with his metal detector. He says he even took that metal detector out to the St. Michael Cemetery once, but Father Kuntz wasn't there at the time. The third was the type of knife that would have fit the leather sheath Wayne Honer described.
The lady I was living with bought me a beautiful Colt hunting knife a year after this happened, and they decided they wanted it to check the knife out.
So did you ever get the knife back?
Oh, God, no.
Wayne Honer's wife, Linda Peterson Honer, was also a detective. She and Detective Don Johnson took that third knife from Snowden in around 2010, about a year after Wayne Honer retired. Both women said their meeting with Len Snowden was memorable, and for more reasons than one. At the time, Snowden had a pet squirrel, along with his talking birds.
That was Buddy. That was my pet. I had him. I used to be a wildlife rehabilitator here.
Okay.
And I gave it up. But Buddy, by the time I got him from the DNR, gave him to me, two of them, and his sibling died. I couldn't save him. And Buddy, I was able to save, and it was the wrong time of the season to let him go. He was too young. So I kept him. And after a while, I opened the cage door so he could come out, and he'd lay up on the back of the couch, or he'd get on my shoulder.
He'd like squirrel?
They like to ride in the truck with me. We'd be going down the interstate, and he'd be sitting up on my shoulder looking out at the traffic going by.
When the two detectives met with Snowden, Johnson tried to pet the squirrel. She was trying to build a rapport with Snowden, but it didn't work. The squirrel bit her.
The squirrel bit me 2 or 3 times on the same finger.
And she picked him up. She wanted to know if he bites. I said, well, he's never bit me. And that was true.
Linda Honer remembered something else distinctive about that day. She says Len Snowden rushed out of the room in the middle of their questioning of him.
He was physically sick to his stomach during our interview with him.
Don Johnson thinks maybe Len Snowden had a virus or something. But Linda Honer says she didn't notice any other symptoms of an illness, and she thought it could have been a sign of a guilty conscience. As for the knives the police took from Snowden, all 3 came back clean. And his DNA didn't match anything found at the crime scene. Still, Maura Smith told the police one more thing that made them suspicious of Len Snowden. It had to do with his behavior after the murder. That's next time on Unsolved. To explore the case on your own, with videos, photos, police reports, and documents, go to jsonline.com/unsolved. Unsolved is reported, written, and produced by me, Gina Barton. Our sound engineer and videographer is Bill Schultz. Photographer, Mark Hoffman. Artist, Lou Saldivar. Web designers, Aaron Coy and Andrew Malika. Our editor of local news and investigations is Greg Borowski. Our copy editor is Debbie Davis. Our theme music this season was composed by Evan Johnson. I also want to thank Donna Billmeyer, Miles Moffitt, Ashley Lutheran, Meg Jones, Tom Ketting, Rachel Piper, Emily Risto, Anissa Johnson, Rick Wood, Brian Kranz, Joe Hanneman, Elena Weissman, and Taylor Palmby for their help this season. And please support local journalism. You can subscribe to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel at jsonline.com/deal. Thank you.